You're listening to The Liberty Beat, your daily source for Liberty news and activist updates. Online at thelibertybeat.com. John Bush here with your Liberty Beat for February 6th, 2013. Gold opened today at $1,676, silver at $31.89, and Bitcoin is trading at $20.92. Today's edition of the Liberty Beat is sponsored by Central Texas Gunworks, specializing in handgun defense training, concealed handgun courses, and firearm sales. Online at CentralTexasGunworks.com. And now the news. Uncomfortable with the Obama administration's use of deadly drones, a growing number in Congress is looking to limit America's authority to kill suspected terrorists, even U.S. citizens. The Democratic-led outcry was emboldened by the revelation in a newly surfaced Justice Department memo that shows drones can strike against a wider range of threats with less evidence than previously believed. The drone program, which has been used from Pakistan across the Middle East and into North Africa to find and kill an unknown number of suspected terrorists, is expected to be a topic of debate when the Senate Intelligence Committee grills John Brennan, the White House's pick for CIA chief, at a hearing Thursday. Too much drama? Boredom and scads of irrelevant information are just some of the reasons Facebook users give for taking a break from the world's biggest social networking site for weeks at a time, according to a new study. A report from the Pew Research Center's Internet in America Life Project found that some 61% of Facebook users had taken a hiatus of at least several weeks for myriad of reasons, whether they were wary from an onslaught of gossip or, for the more pious, the arrival of Lent. Yet the use of Facebook, whether constant or not, is pervasive in America. Of the American adults who use the Internet, 67% are on Facebook, Pew found. That compares with 20% who use LinkedIn and 16% who are on Twitter. Charlottesville, Virginia has become the first city in the United States to formally pass an anti-drone resolution. The resolution passed by a 3-2 vote and was brought to the city council by activist David Swanson and the Rutherford Institute, a civil liberties group based in the city. The measure also endorses a proposed 2-year moratorium on drones in Virginia. Personal information of some 4,000 people in the banking industry, including bank officers, was posted online Sunday by the hacker collective Anonymous. The list was initially posted to the website for the Alabama Criminal Justice Information Center, then apparently taken down by that site's operators. The ACJIC did not respond to a request for comment about the incident. However, the list was also posted elsewhere online and remains available through Google's WebCache. The Liberty Beat is sponsored in part by Sovereign Living, illuminating your path to self-sufficiency. Online at sovereignliving.tv. And by Brave New Books, specializing in free-thinking material for free people since 2006. Online at bravenewbookstore.com.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. Well, in the second hour of today's show, it is my great pleasure and a great honour indeed to have as my guest Karen Hudez, who is a former senior counsel from the World Bank. She's a whistleblower. She has extensive knowledge of the global financial system. A few pertinent facts about Karen: she studied law at Yale. And at the University of Amsterdam, she worked in the U.S. Export-Import Bank of the U.S. from 1980 to 1985. And she worked in the World Bank Legal Department from 1986 to 2007. An extremely experienced veteran of the financial system, who is going to really blow our minds today, ladies and gentlemen. I've been going through some of the interviews that Karen has done on other networks, such as RT and a few other alternative media, and it has been quite an eye-opener. So I'd like to, without further ado, welcome Karen to the show. Karen, are you there?
I am, and thank you so much for having me, Harrowood. I just wanted to correct one thing on the very kind introduction, and that is at the University of Amsterdam, I was studying development economics, and I have a degree called doctoral, which is like a PhD without thesis.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, yeah. So I mean, your entire career was basically in the field of economics and banking, and you were senior counsel at the World Bank. Can you explain to us what that job title actually involves?
Yes, for 20 years, I would go to various countries as their country lawyer, and I would work on all of the World Bank projects in those countries and negotiate them. So for the first 10 years, I was country lawyer for Jordan and Yemen. The man who brought me into the World Bank, Ibrahim Shihada, had been the general counsel of OPEC. That's the oil exporting countries.
Okay.
And so that was what I did. And when you go in, you can also, and after 10 years at the World Bank, you can do your own projects. And I started working on law reform. And I did that in the Philippines, which was the country I went to after the Middle East. I started getting a nose for corruption. And so that was why I had to leave Yemen, because there was a port project in the port of Aden that was corrupt. And people didn't want you to get working on corruption, I found out later. But anyway, so then after 5 years, I started having a problem with corruption in the Philippines. Then I went to Africa. Nigeria was one of my countries. Ghana was one of my countries. And I had a wonderful time working on those things. And then, of course, you know, I got involved in corruption in the World Bank itself and started reporting that up the corporate ladder. And got thrown out of the bank at that point, too. It was all a lot of fun.
So you started detecting that there were serious systemic problems. Was your sort of journey as a whistleblower similar to other people? I mean, did you start sort of optimistically, naively believing that you could simply, report these problems and have them addressed? How did it kind of unfold?
Unfold is a very good word, because there were things that we were taught inside the World Bank. A lot of people like to paint it with a very broad brush, but it was nuanced, just like anything else. In an organization, you're going to have people that are trying to clean things up. And I've actually, the best way to understand my story is that I've been working in teams at various points. And as the, people talk about world corruption as an onion, as the layers of the onion unpeeled, I've been sort of migrating with different groups, but also preserving the groups that I started out with. So I'm just sort of in the center of a hub of all kinds of whistleblowers, and we're all working together. It's a human project is what it is.
Wow. That's
how, and by the way, when I'm working on the current layer of the corruption, I usually have an imperfect knowledge, and because it takes a while before all of the different parties find each other and start, it's like putting a puzzle together. We each have a different piece of the puzzle, and that's how we've been able. I can come up with another analogy. Think of when you're getting some kind of a scan, and you first swallow the barium, and you have to see how that goes through the whole system and the GI tract. Well, the whistleblowers are diagnosing the problem as we go. And so I frequently get criticized for giving imperfect information at whichever layer we're trying to diagnose. But as we've moved through the system, we've gotten a pretty good picture. And so that sort of describes why I'm able to say what I can. But the important thing also is that when you talk about the legal system, we're talking about the legal system of the world. And I'm not talking about one world government, but I am talking about securities laws, which when you buy an international security, you have a right to information. And what I am, in addition to being the lawyer at the World Bank, is I'm a World Bank bondholder. I have the right to accurate financial information. And so I can go to any country and speak directly to their government because they are not providing accurate financial information on World Bank bonds to the bondholders in their country. And I've done that in the United States to each of the governors and the attorneys general in the states. That's what makes my story so,
You have a unique handle on what's going on, and also with your network of whistleblowers around the world, you're obviously building a bigger picture of what's going on.
Let me drill down on that.
Yeah.
I am your lawyer.
Yeah.
I am assisting the lawyers in Australia who want to know what's going on. For example, I've been sending copies to New Zealand of the correspondence that I've had, because I've been writing to these people for years, and they want to know exactly what letter I wrote to their ambassador and what emails I sent to their executive director. So it's really quite profound what it is that we are all working on. This is a joint project, and your listeners are part of this exercise. So don't come to me and say, why haven't you finished the job? The job is now in your court. I'm telling you where it is, and it's up to you to take it further.
Yes, the restoration of democracy, the restoration of basic freedoms and transparency and all these things has to be done by motivated citizens. And this is something I say constantly on this show, is that you can't just expect someone or the government or some, superhero to come and do it for you. We've got to do it ourselves. And that's what democracy actually is.
Let me do things a little backwards from the normal interviews, because people often criticize me for, going down one rabbit hole after another, and people get really confused. So let me start your show with what I was hoping to take away from this interview, hoping for your people to do.
No worries.
Let me tell you where the action is right now. There is more gold than people know exists, about three or four times as much. And this gold is on deposit in, the banks that are too big to fail.
Okay.
It's all over the world. I know exactly the bank account numbers because I'm working together with a lawyer in the Philippines who has this information. And what we need to do is we need to get this gold to be applied to the current currency of all of the countries of the world, because the current monetary system is based on debt, and the banks are allowed to charge interest on your currency. And there's no reason for that.
Yes.
What John F. Kennedy was doing before he was assassinated was he was applying a large chunk of this gold to back the U.S. dollar and kick the Federal Reserve out, so we weren't going to be paying interest on our debt. And that was when he was killed, because, of course, the bankers are making a lot of money this way. And so where things are is the bankers are insisting that this gold is not there. They're trying to obfuscate the situation, and there are all kinds of people trying to discredit me because they don't want people to know about this. So what if anybody doubts about whether the gold exists, there are some interviews on YouTube that I can point you to, including a member of parliament that referred to this. And what I want all of the people of the world to do is to say, okay, this is our gold. You're not entitled to it. The authorized signatory has been trying to withdraw this money for our benefit, and you're not getting with the program. And the reason why it is so important to do this quickly is because the bankers who own all of the mainstream media are providing disinformation. You saw how they tried to get us into World War III with Syria.
Yeah.
There has been one false flag after another in the United States. I'll just name them right off the bat. There was a nuclear device that was detonated on October 8th off the coast of South Carolina. The two naval commanders who prevented the bomb from going off in Charleston, which is what they were planning, were fired. And then there are almost 200 other officers in the United States Defense Department that have lost their jobs because they're resisting being overtaken. You can see how important it is for us to prevent this from going further. We're in mortal danger.
Indeed. Well, I didn't know about the detonation of a nuclear device. Is this something that was suppressed in the news? I mean,
of course it was.
How do we verify that?
Well, I can show you all of the different articles, and of course you can see the naval officers, the commander whose job it was to keep track of all the nuclear devices, and the one whose job it was to keep control over the missiles, and they were fired because the bomb was detonated in the ocean rather than on the coast.
Oh, I see.
So you can see that, and you can see the furor over all the firing of the officers. Yeah, I can show you all of that. There's a lot of that.
Extraordinary. Now, your view of things certainly is that there is this global cartel of bankers, which is essentially controlling everything, geopolitics, the media, Do you see this as some kind of cohesive Illuminati, for want of a better word? I'm trying to understand, you know, the way you see it.
It's not the way I see it. It's not my opinion. All you have to do is read the study of three mathematicians at the Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich, Switzerland. They took accurate data on ownership of the 43,000 transnational corporations.
Yes.
And they modeled it. And what they found out was there was one super entity. What these clever folks had done is they took the same individuals to serve on the boards of all of these companies. That's called interlocking directors. So when you think Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, Citibank, you name it, Deutsche Bank are separate, they are not, because they have the same exact management. And so when you want to try to figure out why it was that the LIBOR interest rates were all fiddled with, or the gold prices are all manipulated, it's because this super entity, which is what the mathematicians called it, is at work. They've been at work, and they continue to be at work. So,
yes.
For example, they own 60% of the annual earnings of the earnings on the capital markets. They own 40% of the net worth. Now, this is, you know, and they own the mainstream media and prevent any reporter who wants to tell a story that doesn't align with their propaganda.
Absolutely. And we've certainly seen so many examples of that. And it's something that's incredibly obvious, but you often wonder, you know, where are the orders coming from? You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're just going to break. I'm talking to my guest, Karen Hudez. Very important interview. Please stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
All the talk about gun grabbing got you down? How would you like to be the proud owner of a brand new AR-15? Then go to LogosRadioNetwork.com and enter the drawing to win a free Rock River AR-15, sponsored by Zombie Killers Ammo and Guns. Support Logos Radio Network by donating just $20 to their fundraiser, and you'll get your name entered into the drawing. Second place prize is a Spikes Tactical AR-15 lower receiver, sponsored by CentralTexasGunWorks.com. Every $20 you donate will put your name in the hat. So increase your chances of winning by increasing your donation. Winners must be eligible to lawfully own and possess these items. Please visit LogosRadioNetwork.com for details. If you love all the liberty-minded programming on Logos Radio Network, contribute to the fundraiser and secure your chance to win a Rock River AR-15, sponsored by Zombie Killers Ammo and Guns. Like them on Facebook at Zombie Killers LLC. Contest ends February 28th.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner, or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com, or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. My guest today is Karen Hudez, former senior counsel and whistleblower at the World Bank. For over 20 years, Karen was involved in many, many different transactions all around the world at a very, very high level. Karen, I just wonder if we could step back a little, because in the show, I like to try and give my listeners some kind of education, some kind of deeper understanding of the subject matter we're looking at. And what I find often in these discussions is that a lot of things are assumed. But what I would just like to talk about a little bit is the history of the World Bank itself. Now, I know the World Bank was formed in 1944 along with the International Monetary Fund, and these two organizations seemed to work as a pair in conjunction with each other in some way. And the stated goal of the World Bank, according to Wikipedia, which I'm currently looking at, is to reduce poverty. Can you just talk to us a little bit about the World Bank historically, what it was and what it's become?
Yes. The best way to describe the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund is they are actually one organization. They have the same exact board, which is 188 countries. It's a cooperative. Think of like a farmer's cooperative. And it was created in 1944. There's the stated purpose, and then there's the real utility of this organization. And I like to think of it as a bus that's been hijacked by the elite of the world. It was created by the elite of the world with a nefarious hidden purpose, a hidden agenda. But the fact of the matter is, in order to get the countries to sign on, they had to give it, the stated purpose. But the thing is, if you have a takeover of good people, you can hijack that bus and put it to your own purpose.
Yes.
And one of the stated purposes of the World Bank was to prevent World War III. That was how they snookered the people into signing on to the organization.
But
the fact of the matter is, if you look at its stated purpose in the articles, the World Bank and the IMF together can actually be hijacked by people to solve a problem, because it convenes the parties in a very special way. It's not like the United Nations, where you have one country, one vote. The votes are weighted in accordance with the power of the economic power. So the United States, which is the most powerful country, has 16% of the vote. And if you are the super entity, all you have to do is come in, capture the presidency, and then use improper personnel policies to just dominate the place. And in 10 years into my tenure at the World Bank, I got involved in a personnel group, which was hired by, not hired, it was put together by the board to try to improve personnel policies. And what happened was, of course, the man who we brought in to help got fired almost immediately. And, you know, when I was on this task force, I was representing the Staff Association. And at the end of our recommendations, I said, okay, now we're going to put a monitoring group in to see whether the reforms take hold. And they didn't follow that recommendation. And that was one of the very biggest red flags that I had. But I was actually brought in. Let me explain why I was brought in, because I didn't even know it at the time. The man who brought me in knew that I was a reformer. Reformer is not quite the best way to describe it. The longest serving general counsel at the World Bank was a Dutch lawyer named Aaron Brochus. And I had gotten to know him. And, you know, this is when he had retired. And if you read the history of the conference, they're called the Bretton Woods Institutions because 44 countries went to this ski resort in, where is it, New Hampshire, called Bretton Woods. But the World Bank was, and the International Monetary Fund, was a kind of compromise, because the United States was given the informal ability to handpick the president of the World Bank, and the Europeans could handpick the managing director of the International Monetary Fund. This lasted for 66 years, and in 2010, the countries of the world said to the United States, no, we are going to have a selection based on merit. And so the current president of the World Bank is not what can I say? He ran against a slew of other candidates, Jim Kim. And he's, you know, the United States is certainly not going to get another president if we don't manage to solve the problem. But the most important thing, I think, that I can tell people is that the World Bank is a knowledge bank. People come to the World Bank with all kinds of products that they think will be useful in the projects that the World Bank does. And one of the people that came to the World Bank was a political scientist named Jacek Kugler, who chaired the political science group in Claremont University. And he had been working on, it's called a power transition model for the Department of Defense. It's extremely accurate. It uses game theory modeling to predict what the consequences will be of certain policy actions. I took him with me to Ghana. We were looking at a freedom of information law, and we found out it was the Germans who were financing this project. We found out that the law was not getting enacted because Germany was insisting on a law that made no sense on the ground in Ghana. And one of the things I had learned in working on rule of law in countries is that if you don't let people adopt their own laws that they themselves want, you get a terrible thing. You get something called the transplant effect, which is you undermine legality in the country. They have laws that don't make sense to them on their books that get totally ignored and never implemented. So I then asked Jacek if he would let me model rule of law at the World Bank. And he did. And this model has been a blueprint for me, because the World Bank is a microcosm of the world. I hadn't realized at the time exactly how powerful that model was. And the other thing I hadn't realized was that Jacek had done a macro model, not rule of law, but of the power transition between East and West. And what his model and my model showed was that if the United States did not end the corruption, that we were all going to, the world was going to land in a huge ditch. We were going to have a currency war, and currency wars are always followed by regular wars. Right. So, and what Jacek said to me, this was in 2004, he didn't just come to the World Bank because he thought his, his product would be good to put in other projects, but he had a real mission. He said, my model is predicting that if we don't get this thing straightened out, we're going to have a nuclear war in the Middle East. And he said, I'm estimating now that we've got 5 years. But what happened is I started working on that project, on that problem. And so you can see Syria was what Jacek was talking about, and we defused that. And now we are, you know, and when I say we, who is we? It's a very loose coalition, but it's all the people who understand what the project is that we are all working on. And it's a coalition of countries. I have been on Russia Television Today, three times now. Yeah. The Germans, their website, their business website that has 1.5 million viewers per month, they have an interview of me on there. And one of the questions that they drilled down on that they wanted me to handle was, what is the meaning of the fact that a military helicopter buzzed the U.S. consulate in Frankfurt? This happened in October.
Indeed.
And then I had to,
I've heard
that
story.
And read to see what the meaning was. It was a shot across the bow. So you have, through this loose coalition, you have messages being sent from one group to the other. And this is, and the model has been very clear, and I've been very clear in 2008 when I spoke to the current Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel. He was then a senator in Nebraska. I had been fired for a year, and I was talking to him about the model. And I said, we have got to get our act together. We have got to get rid of this corruption. I didn't understand what the corruption was. I thought it was just the corruption inside the World Bank. But I said, it's very clear, this model, that we are going to lose the gentleman's agreement, which actually happened in 2010. I said, and if that isn't enough of a warning, my exact words were, you can't play cat and mouse with these issues, or we're going to have World War III.
Absolutely.
I told Chuck Hagel this in 2008.
Absolutely. We're just going to break you with Truth News Radio Australia. Really, really interesting material you're going through there. We're going to be continuing for the next half hour with this investigation into the World Bank. Do stay with us. You're with Truth News Radio.
is for you.
Soon, store mannequins may be singing that tune. They're being outfitted with cameras to watch us while we shop. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, back with details after this.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights. Say no to surveillance and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This message is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
It's disturbing enough that Big Brother governments use facial recognition technology to identify and track people on the streets. Now clothing companies in Europe, Canada, and America are getting in on the act. So where do they hide the cameras? In the eyes of mannequins. That's right, those glamorous plastic ladies in the display windows may be watching you back. They're called eye seers, and their job is to log the age, gender, and race of passersby, so retailers can devise new schemes to get you to buy. But hang on, aren't mannequins spooky enough already? This is taking weird science to a whole new level. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht for StartPage.com, the world's most private search engine.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
Thought that I was doing well, but the truth to you I'll tell. MSGs and GMO really ain't the way to go. There's a better way I've seen. It's called Tangy Tangerine. And we're all drinking Tangy Tangerine. Tangy Tangerine, Tangy Tangerine. We're all drinking Tangy Tangerine, Tangy Tangerine, Tangy Tangerine.
Order Beyond Tangy Tangerine and other great longevity products at LogosRadioNetwork.com by clicking on the Tangy Tangerine banner. Sign up as a preferred customer for wholesale prices or become a distributor and support LogosRadioNetwork.com. So what do you say, Elvis?
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I'm talking to Karen Hudez, whistleblower from the World Bank, who has some explosive revelations that really the subject is so big, it's hard to know how to come at it. Karen, I don't want to cut you off in mid-flight, but I've got some questions I want to raise. Now, one thing that's on my mind in particular is to understand the nature of the corruption that we're talking about. I know we can't get into every minor detail of it. I just want to give you a kind of non-technical version of it. From my understanding, is that the basic structure of this post-war World Bank system is fundamentally exploitative. Because when you get into a situation where you're handing out money to very poor countries all around the world, in order, you obviously are doing it with an agenda, and the agenda has always been control. And it appears to be, and it's a no-brainer. It's not rocket science. You know, you can see that this is part of an agenda of empire that I guess at the end of the Second World War, when the old empires were finally crumbling and the British Empire was in its final days, there was a new form of financial empire. Of course, it had always been there as well, but it kind of had to really kind of go underground a little bit more. But in doing so, its iron grip was perhaps even greater than it's ever been, because with this financial control of countries through lending them money, the control through debt, but they also did that on the individual level with the incredible proliferation of people borrowing money for mortgages, which again hadn't been before the Second World War, hadn't been so significant. So what we've seen is that the whole world has been put into slavery by debt. Your take on that, please.
Yes, Harrowood, you're making it sound as if there's been progress and as if there's some kind of movement forward.
Yeah.
But what I can tell you is that it's been remarkably consistent. The same group that has been in control for the last 500 years is still very much in control, and that group is the Jesuits. And all okay. of the goings-on and commotion has simply been their manipulations behind the scenes with the people in the government.
I see.
They've had an iron grip, and they have just played one group off against another. And all you've been seeing is the puppetry on the world stage. But the group that's had the control in the background continues to have the control. What's a little bit different is that we've diagnosed what they're up to, and we can point fingers and we can say, okay, we've had enough of it. You're fired. We don't want you anymore. And they know that. They hear that. But they don't think that we have enough oomph. And we're showing them that, yes, we do have enough oomph. And that's where it is right now.
Can I ask you, Karen, do you believe that the Jesuits essentially rule the Vatican?
Of course.
Right.
Well, look, you've got a Jesuit who's now the Pope.
But is he – there haven't been that many Jesuit popes have there? I mean, I'm not quite sure, I'm not up to speed on this, but how many Jesuit popes have there indeed been?
They have been killing all the others.
Right, right.
And poisoning them.
Right.
Through the years. And, you know, they assassinated John F. Kennedy, and then they were told that they were not welcome in the United States. And Ronald Reagan undid that. No, look. It's very clear who they are and what they're doing. Once you know this problem and show it, it's very, very evident.
And so were these Jesuits involved in the Bretton Woods arrangements that took place in 1944?
They buy the governmental, they buy the people in the government who become their puppets.
Right.
It's all a matter of manipulation from behind the scenes. They're bribed, they're threatened, they're captured in honeypots. I don't know if your people know what those are. They get people. The Jesuits started out low tech, using confessionals. they were the ones that introduced those.
Ah, okay. To extract confessions for the purpose of blackmail?
Yes.
Right. Right, of course. So the Jesuits introduced the confessional into the Catholic Church, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, I did not know that. So the Jesuit order, of course, there are quite a number of orders within the Church. How do the other orders get along with the Jesuits? I mean, are there conflicts there?
It's not the orders within the Church. This is a secular group. They're hiding behind religion. It has nothing to do with Catholicism. You should see the emails I'm getting from the Catholic people that are onto this problem
right.
and are trying to clean up their church. This is not a religious problem. This is very secular. The Jesuits own Bank of America, or they did. They sold Bank of America. Now they own Citibank. And the wealth and the land that they command, this is the largest organization in the world. And, methods are absolutely ruthless, so that people who once they've heard from this group are going to march to those orders. Now you can say, well, why is it, Karen, that you're not marching to those orders and you're still alive? And I can tell you, you know, how, first of all, I never would have started out on this if I had understood what I was up against. But once you're in the middle of it, there's only one way going forward. And the way it's all unfolded is I've been embedded in groups every step of the way. And I was captain of the NYU fencing team. So all you have to do to get me riled up is to try to intimidate me. I just have a blind spot for that. I don't intimidate.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
One year I had five flat tires, and I went into a company, which, you know, it's called Costco. And in a very loud voice, I said, "This is the fifth flat tire." And you'd think they would get an idea that I don't intimidate, you know. And I said this in the whole place, and everybody heard that. And I named who it was that was giving me a flat tire. So, and I'm talking about a cover-up. So if something should happen to me, then fine. Everybody knows that there was a cover-up. It's not that I've got anything special. The only thing that I have is that I'm telling people what's going on and who's working with me. My project can go forward without me. I'm not, you know, indispensable. And the other whistleblowers that are working with me, we're all working together. So take one of us down, take three of us down. They'll be, you know, the rest of them will go forward with a vengeance. That's how it's working.
Right. So, yeah, there's this network. And the other people that you're networking with, some of them are still within the World Bank. Is that correct?
Yes. But it's not limited to World Bank whistleblowers. Yeah. I was fired in 2007. And then I started working with whoever I could work with. And at a certain point a couple of years ago, I started realizing the problem that I had with the media and why my story wasn't getting out. And that's when I started working with a U.S. whistleblower named Mark Novitsky. I found him because I've been working with a United Kingdom whistleblower, Elaine Colville, and she told me to look at some of the cover-ups that were going on with the Securities and Exchange Commission, because the SEC is just allowing this super entity to do insider trading. So whatever people are getting in profits off the capital markets, that's after the super entity has done its finished its insider trading. We're just getting the scraps from the table that they leave us.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Mark Novitsky had been working with on domestic surveillance with a company that was taking the information that people had when they purchased something, it's called Teletech, and selling that back to the government. And Mark knew how to get coverage in the alternative media. And we've been working together very, very closely. He's one of these incredible dot connectors, and it's just a pleasure to work with him.
Great, yeah. Now, look, can we get into some of the substantive issues of the corruption that you found? I mean, whatever you're able to elaborate on, in terms of like what you, I mean, I get what brought you into confrontation with your employer, and then what, you know, what led to you basically being fired. We're just going to break shortly, but maybe just a quick clip on that.
Yes, I was working in the Philippines on the financial sector after the East Asia financial crisis in 1999. And what I uncovered was a very corrupt man named Lucio Tan and the president, Joseph Estrada. And there was a failed project of $900 million.
I'll just have to cut you off there. Very sorry, Cam. We're going to break. We'll continue this straight after the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Very important interview. Don't go away.
Mr. President, members of Congress, you've been making a lot of noise about taking our guns away. But you might want to review history. 1835, Gonzales, Texas Territory. The authorities wanted to confiscate the big gun that protected that colony. You know what the people said? Come and take it. Because they were willing to fight for their freedom and their guns. So are we.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from our cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time. Just like Gonzales, we're keeping our guns.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. JurisDictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. Our guest today is Karen Chudez, whistleblower from the World Bank. Karen, you were just getting there into the story about what happened in the Philippines and what you were uncovering. Please continue.
Okay, I was working together with the Chief Justice in the Philippines, Hilario Davide, who's one of the most wonderful people I've ever gotten to know. And so at the end of the project, there was a $900 million failure. The central bank, the Federal Philippines Deposit Insurance Corporation, had to bail out the second largest bank in the Philippines, National Bank, for $500 million. And Joseph Estrada ended up getting impeached. He was the president who had sold a majority of the shares to a borrower who owned Philippine Airlines. So that was huge corruption. Estrada had to pay back over $30 million that he had stolen from the Philippine people.
Wow.
And the World Bank rated the project as satisfactory. And that was lying to the board. And
really?
I went to see Jim Wolfensohn, who was then the president of the World Bank, together with Peter Steck, who was the man representing the Dutch government. Peter Steck had gone to the University of Amsterdam in economics, which is where I graduated. But I got to know him from a different project. Anyway, actually, I got to know him because I was trying to work on a water project in the Middle East. And the Dutch is the constituency which also represents Israel. So, and I was also working with the then representative of the Israeli government, who ended up getting fired because she was trying to work on peace in the Middle East together with me and Peter Steck. We got a little ahead of the corruption. They didn't like us. But anyway, so what I was reporting was a cover-up, which, of course, you cannot have in a large organization. And I ended up getting interviewed for the job of general counsel. And during the interview, I was asked why there were so many general counsels being fired. And I said, it's very simple. It's because there's corruption, and the World Bank is out of compliance on the capital markets. And if you're an executive search firm for the position of general counsel in a non-complying company that trades $180 billion worth of bonds on the capital markets, I knew at that point that I was going to clean up the World Bank, that I was in the driver's seat. And I have been in the driver's seat ever since.
Yeah, and obviously this situation in the Philippines was quite dramatic, and of course I'm just having a look here at Joseph Estrada. He actually went on trial for plunder, and what was the outcome of that in the end?
The outcome was that he had to pay the money back. You mean what is the outcome in the Philippines?
Well, so the outcome is that he actually was found guilty. He was found guilty beyond reasonable doubt, and he had to pay the money back. But the real culpability here lay with the World Bank in that they facilitated this kind of arrangement. And this is what you were trying to obviously expose and to prevent from happening in the future, I would imagine.
Harrowood, let's drill down to what I just said to you, because it just flew right past you. I said I was in the driver's seat. I am in the driver's seat. What seat is that? It's the international financial system.
Yeah.
Me and all the people that are working with me are cleaning up the international financial system. And we have a 90 to 95% chance of succeeding. And the reason is because of that accurate stakeholder analysis. Jacek Kugler disappeared after I started blowing the whistle with the U.S. Congress. When I was fired, I went to the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. It was chaired by Joe Biden at the time.
Yeah.
It had Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama as junior senators on that committee. And they were obligated in their oversight function to clean up the World Bank. And Senator Lugar stuck with a problem. He wrote three letters to the World Bank. He said, don't fire this lady. When they fired me, he then worked together with two senators, Leahy and Bayh, to commission a government accountability office audit of the corruption. The World Bank stonewalled that GAO inquiry. And then when I was in 2009, I met with the chair of the audit committee in the World Bank. He was the representative of Saudi Arabia. I'm a joint project of the world to clean up this corruption in the Vatican.
Yeah.
So they then hired KPMG, which is an auditing firm. And KPMG did not follow the audit standards. So Elaine Colville and I took KPMG to task with all of the auditors of the world. And the auditors, what we found out was the auditors of the world have a little old boys club, and they refuse to clean up corruption. I found this out about the legal profession as well, because you were asking me when I was fired how they fired me. I had a memorandum of understanding, which the World Bank then reneged on, and they took White out and they falsified the documents
really?
In the internal tribunal in the World Bank. So I went and I complained about the lawyers who had broken the rules of professional responsibility and asked for those lawyers to be disbarred. But the D.C. Bar Association, the Board of Professional Responsibility, refused to do that. So
my
what
goodness.
I have discovered is that at the very heart of the legal profession and the very heart of the accounting profession, there's nobody home.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So
yeah.
What we have to do is we in the process of uncovering this corruption, we have also diagnosed where the holes are. And the very first thing that has to happen in the legal profession is that the lawyers are not in charge of discipline of their members. The brethren is not going to continue. And the same thing for the auditors. This sweetheart deal, we're not going to give them a pass anymore. It's going to be the public who's going to be inside policing those crooks. They're all crooks.
Can I just ask you, a few more minutes left in the show, do you think that alternate currencies like Bitcoin are going to provide another way that we can kind of overturn the tyranny of this system? Do you think that is actually possibly the solution to this problem? Because it seems like the power of these groups is so entrenched, and because the monetary system is the system that we all subscribe to, they have so much of it. With that much money and power, they can corrupt and infiltrate, and they can basically own the system from the inside simply through money and power. I mean, is an alternative currency, or perhaps, as you said earlier, you're talking about the return to a gold standard. I mean, what's the prognosis for that?
Okay. First of all, everybody says I'm talking about return to the gold standard. That is incorrect. I am talking about competition among currencies. I have nothing against Bitcoin, but what I absolutely do not want is for people to keep their wealth in the Bitcoin. You can use it for transactions, but put your wealth elsewhere. You don't want a computer snafu for all of your money to go up in smoke. So it's a tool, but there should not be any one tool, because you're absolutely right. You should not have currency being the mechanism for power, which it currently is. What you have in the United States is that the states can declare precious metals as legal tender.
Some
of them have done this, and I'm trying to get all of them to do this. We should have precious metals as legal tender. And don't forget what the BRICS countries have done, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. They are no longer denominating 25% of world trade in dollars. They are denominating it in as a barter system, and the offsets will be financed by gold. So, yes, we need to end the tyranny. But what we need to do in very short order is to move from a debt-based currency system, which is what everyone now has. The Bank for International Settlement has 58 central banks as members. We need to end that organization immediately and back our currency with the gold that belongs to all the people of the world. There is gold sitting there waiting to be allocated to Australia. And when you know, I get off this interview, yeah, and you all hear this interview, I want all of you to make sure that the gold that's allocated to Australia actually backs your currency and you fire your central bank. This has to happen immediately, because these bankers that are now sitting there are not going to take this sunset very, very kindly.
I can imagine. A quick question, Karen. Do you have any insights on Libya? Because there were some stories that went around that Colonel Gaddafi was actually trying to establish a gold-backed currency for Africa, and that was the main reason why he was taken out, and that is a kind of a sign of how seriously these players want to crush any kind of competition. Do you any quick insights on that?
That is absolutely correct. And the point is, when people get busy in this, if they work in groups, then they're protected. So yes, you're absolutely right. And everybody who wants to have their children live in a decent world has got to get with this program and work in groups, work with people in your neighborhoods.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, what would you recommend, you know, the listeners of this show to do practically? I mean, what are the practical steps that people can take right now?
Just demand that your currency be backed by the gold that's allocated to you and that the bankers are sitting on and refusing. You know, the person who's the authorized signatory is sitting there waiting to sign an agreement. It's just that the people are, I have two Siamese cats that have been indoors, and if you open the door, they won't go outside. That's right. What you people have to do. You have to go through the door and demand that your currency be asset-backed, and there's gold allocated to you, and you have to demand that that gold actually be allocated to you. I can write the agreement. I am sitting in the driver's seat, but if the people who are hearing me insist on staying in their house and not going out the door, there's nothing I can do. It's got to be a partnership.
Well, that's a fascinating suggestion, what you're saying, that the gold is sitting there allocated. But doesn't that gold already, I mean, obviously it belongs to somebody or some institution or some agency.
Yes, and I've got all the documents. There is a German lawyer who has given me copies of all those documents who lives in the Philippines.
Right, right. And so this gold, when you say it's been allocated, who allocated it?
Marcos. There is a history of where this gold came from and what its intended purpose was.
Really?
And it's all on the internet. I can show your listeners, you know, what the history is.
Terrific. Well, I'll try and get some links from you, which we'll put on the show notes after the show. We are at the end of the hour. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks for having me, Harold. It's been great.
Yeah, no, it's been quite incredible. And I will keep tabs on everything you've said and hopefully get you on again. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me again. Bye-bye.
Thanks. That's a show from Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back next week. See you then.
Would you like to make more definite progress in your walk with God? Bibles for America is offering a free study Bible and a set of free Christian books that can really help. The New Testament Recovery Version is one of the most comprehensive study Bibles available today. It's an accurate translation, and it contains thousands of footnotes that will help you to know God and to know the meaning of life. The free books are a three-volume set called Basic Elements of the Christian Life. Chapter by chapter, Basic Elements of the Christian Life clearly presents God's plan of salvation, growing in Christ, and how to build up the church. To order your free New Testament Recovery Version and Basic Elements of the Christian Life, call Bibles for America toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.
Looking for some truth? You found it. LogosRadioNetwork.com.